This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go with some headlines. Mariners lose again last night. They're now 16 games above 500, but now a game and a half behind the A's, who won a 1-0 long game last night. Marco Gonzalez roughed up a little bit. Again, the bats are continuing to be bad. I think what the team's like 7-15 over the last 22 games since July 1st are scoring 2.8 runs a game. I mean, it's been pretty bad right now. So series continues against Toronto today. Big night because James Paxton gets to pitch against Toronto. First time he's able to go against them since his no-hitter. So they need Paxton to get this win. And again, this is really a bad struggle right now. Juan Nicasio goes down. Jason Bradford brought up. Nicasio, of course, goes on the disabled list with a knee injury. In football, the Seahawks working out four players coming up on Sunday. And you can see they're trying to see if they can get a veteran pass rusher. Eric Walden comes in, former Indianapolis Colt. Lamar Houston, a kind of defensive tackle, defensive end. He could also be linebacker. He comes in. He'd been with Chicago Bears. DeMonte Moore, who's been here in and out before, and Dominic Rogers Cromartie. I'm going to test him out again. They're a little thin at the slot cornerback position. I think if they sign him, that would be one of the things he'll be competing for, to be the backup slot guy. Right now, Nico Thorpe is getting a little bit of work there. As far as other news, Tio is going to be getting his celebration, not in the Hall of Fame, but down in Chattanooga, where he's going to give his speech without the gold jacket. That goes on. Of course, there will be the Hall of Fame and Shrine ceremonies coming up tonight. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN. 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Jim Moore. And, of course, the first question, Jim, is there a golf show today?
There's not a golf show today, Professor. We're probably going to have one next week, though, for the PGA Championship. And then Sean and I are also talking about doing one for the Ryder Cup, too. But, boy, it's a great golf tournament going on there at Firestone. So Tiger Woods is in the mix, but we won't be having a show today.
Yeah, how's Tiger doing? Because I know one of the problems I had, and it was my bad because I just didn't figure it out, is that I started calling for cars this week in Cleveland, and everything was booked. I mean, every rental car agency, because I was flying into Cleveland and wanted to get down to Canton for the Hall of Fame, and it literally took me 2.5 days to be able to land any kind of a car, and I had to pay a pretty big price to do it, but I got one. But I didn't realize, not only did they have the Firestone going on here, but they had, I think, one of the big sports collectors conventions in Cleveland. So there wasn't a car to be had for the most part.
Yeah, it's a big tournament, especially for one that's right before a major there with the PGA coming up at Belle Reve. But no, Tiger's in the hunt. It's going to be interesting. And then Kyle Stanley's only two shots back too, out of Gig Harbor, and so it should be an interesting weekend. And sorry to hear about your rental car difficulties there, but a lot going on there with in Canton and everything else. So it's a fun time of year though, John, with everything that's going on, not just the golf, but NFL kicking in, and then we got the playoff race going on too with the Mariners, and I don't even know what to make or say about them anymore, John. It's looking like an epic collapse is shaping up here. I hope that's not the case, but it might be that I think we can all agree that they weren't as good as they were playing when they were 24 games over 500, but I don't think they're quite as bad as they are right now, are they? I'm having a hard time figuring out this team, John.
Yeah, it is. And because, I mean, this is a massive collapse. There's no question about it. And, you know, with 16, 17 years without playoffs, I mean, this would be the most devastating, to be up 24 games above 500 and then now fall this far back. And now they're a game and a half behind the A's. You know, I started worrying about this 2 weeks ago because you know how big I am on the run differential. And so, basically when they're 20 games above and, you know, they're right around, you know, the even mark as far as that, I mean, that pretty much makes you an 81 win team, and this was an 81 win team that was winning against the bad teams and getting some clutch hits in the final innings and getting some good pitching when they needed it to be able to at least beat the numbers and be on pace for a 92-93 win season. But they weren't going to be a 92-91 now they're -8 in the run differential. I mean, it's been really bad since this mark has gone down, I think. And so what you're looking at is a team that was overachieving, that was playing at that 92-win level, now is playing like a team that's at that 77-game level. So it's not good.
Yeah, you look at the last 22 games. I was reading Scott Hansen's game story in the Seattle Times from Mariners losing 7-2 last night to the Blue Jays. And boy, what a, you know, just a tough environment too, where you have a home game and yet it seems like you're on the road because there's so many Blue Jay fans there. And then you don't shut them up by, you know, you lose. And so if you're winning, you can quiet them down a bit. But no, it's a hard one to figure out. It really is. I look at it and I'm just going, man, they just can't keep playing the way they are. And Scott Servais, poor guy, he's sitting there. It's almost like every game he's saying, I know it's going to turn around. I know it's going to turn. These guys are good. They're good hitters. They're going to turn it around. And yet these were two games, John, where they should have turned it around if they were going to turn it around offensively, because they faced a guy Thursday night who the Blue Jays just signed. He was a triple-A player for the most part, and he shuts them down for six innings, four hits in six innings and no runs. And then last night, although the guy looked good for the Blue Jays, a left-hander, I don't even know what his name is, John Barducci or something like that, but the kid looked really good, but still, that was his first major league win last night. His previous seven starts, he didn't get the win. I don't know if the Blue Jays won or not in his starts, but those are two guys that you would think a veteran lineup would take care of or would handle, you know, maybe get four, five, six runs or even knock those guys out of the game. And the Mariners weren't able to do that. So, yeah, as much as I don't want to think this is a trend, A's and how they're playing, winning 1-0 last night over Detroit, game and a half lead now on the Mariners, I'm just hoping that they can keep in this thing. And you like their chances tonight, though, don't you? I mean, James Paxton's going. You mentioned in your headlines about him having the no-hitter for face the Blue Jays since then. And so they should win tonight, shouldn't they, John?
You would have to think. I mean, if they don't win, yeah, it's like this is incredible. And because Paxton comes off and he had a great start last week, and now he's back and it's a Toronto. You know, it's emotional for him and all that. And this is not a good Toronto team. I mean, they've been sellers. They've given away talent, and so this is a very beatable team. And you got your best pitcher on the mound, so you would think that they should be able to do that. But I thought last night they should have been able to do it with Marco Gonzalez on the mound. They've lost two to a team that they should not lose two games to. So this is critical. But going back to the hitting, Nathan Bishop from Baseball Perspective put these numbers together. Listen to this. Since July the 1st, they've got six hitters in the high or low 300 on-base percentage. But, you know, D. Gordon, 298, his on-base percentage is like a 311. You got Juan Segura at 228 since July 1st. Mitch Haniger at 228. You've got Kyle Seager at 237. Ryan Healy at 198. Mike Zunino at 233. I mean, other than Gordon, who, you know, doesn't walk, but he gets some hits and, you know, gets banged up a lot. They've got six guys that are just in a long, long slump.
Well, yeah, and you wonder, John, I think they're that Segura is going to come around. He's just going through a bad phase here. And I think you know that Haniger isn't going to continue at this rate. But the other guys, you go, well, that might continue. I mean, what, is Ryan Healy going to magically have a better on-base percentage? Mike Zunino's not going to magically have a better on-base percentage. And you hope, you keep hoping. Seager, you always go, well, he's off to a slow start. Well, you see that every year. Now it's, you're two-thirds of the way through the season, and you're wondering about Seager. Now, he hit well last night, so maybe that's a good sign, but yeah, I'm concerned about the lineup. I was looking at the lineup last night, and really, 5 through 9, you look at those guys, and you're going, well, you know, you hope they come through, but you don't expect them to come through anymore. And it's kind of funny because the offense was the one thing that you looked at going into the season that you didn't really have any concerns about. It was mostly the rotation, and that's still the biggest concern. You know, the other thing is that, to be honest, John, I look at DePoto, and I really appreciate all the different things he's done. And you know, to his credit, he always says that River's going nuts right now. I'm just jumping in my arms. Sorry about that, John. But, you know, sometimes I feel like he makes too many moves. And I know that he's made good moves, and it's Jerry DePoto is a big reason why the Mariners are even in contention. But, you know, these three relievers that he brought in, I'm like, well, you know, are they really that much better than what you had before? I wonder about that. And we'll see with Uvalala and who are the other guys, John? Warren from the Yankees.
Right.
And then the lefty from Minnesota.
The poor guy
comes in and gives up his first home run. You know, not a good debut for the Mariners. But I just wonder about the clubhouse chemistry. You know, you're bringing in different guys. You're trying to improve the team. But I don't know if those relievers are really that much of an upgrade and what it's maybe done to, you know, that bullpen and the chemistry they had.
Yeah, well, I knew that, you know, on another one that I think of, because, again, hitting has been so much of the problem that, that's why I was so stunned that they sent Ben Gamble down, because at least that, he had been trending better in the hitting, and that's what this team needs with the 22 games and 2.8 runs a game. And remember going into the season.
Well, John, they overthought that one, I thought.
Yeah.
Because here's a team that's struggling with their hitting, and, you know, okay, it makes sense, you know, and you sit there and you listen to Service and DePoto and you go, well, okay, Heredia, better defensive player, better backup to Maven in center field, but hitting 180 since June 1st for a team that's struggling to hit, so, you know, it just didn't. If I'm Ben Gamble, I'm kicking and screaming on my way to Tacoma. I'm going, what? Are you kidding me? I'm 10 for my last enemy to the Rainiers. I think it's great that he went down there and hit a home run in his first game, and he was 2 for 5 last night. But if you're him, John, what are you thinking? Like, what? I'm hitting, and you want to send me down?
That one kind of caught me cold. And that maybe what it is, that is overthinking. Because, again, you know, it was Heredia that's been struggling at the plate, and now he's the one's being replaced. And here's Gamble. I mean, now you got Maven, but it's like just because he's not in that lefty-righty mix for the left field job, I didn't understand that one. That, to me, because, again, they need bats. They need hitting. And he was on base. I mean, he had got his average up, close to 300 at one point, and he wasn't trending backwards like everybody else.
Yeah, you know, it's a hard one to figure out, and they really need to just get back together behind Paxton tonight. Take your chances tomorrow against the Blue Jays, and then you go out on the road, and then, you know, we'll see how it goes with Felix and his next start. That was a weird one Thursday night, John, where I didn't know what to make of Felix's start. As much as I wanted to believe the numbers showing that he only gave up 2 runs in 5 innings, he sure labored to get to that with 92 pitches. And I was kind of hoping that he'd be a lot better or a lot worse, so it would make it an easy decision for DePoto and Service. But it was middle of the road, and I guess you gave him the benefit of the doubt, and we'll see how he does in Texas.
No doubt. That's the amazing part of this whole season is how it flipped. I mean, it flipped in the sense that, everybody thought the pitching was going to be more of the problem. This would be a real good hitting team, you know, scoring over 4.7 runs a game. You know, that seemed to be, and they'd play a lot of, it was like, if they were going to win, they were going to win high scoring games. And then it turns out they go in and they're winning the low scoring games and, doing it in a surprise basis. Now, nothing's going right.
Yeah, it's one thing to score 7 runs in a 3-game series against the Astros. Everybody understands how good that rotation is for Houston. But like we were talking about, when you struggle against a Triple-A guy Thursday night and then a rookie last night, it just makes you wonder. And I know they had a players-only meeting last night. And I don't know. I suppose that's a good thing, but sure seems like they need to relax and get back to who they were earlier this season. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure Service is trying everything he can think of to get these guys going. But, man, it sure looks like... Yeah, the good thing, though, John, I was thinking about it. So it's just Oakland. It's just one team that you're battling. And it's not a 3 or 4 team race. And I don't think the Mariners are as bad as they've been when they've gone 7-15 in this last 22-game stretch. I think they're going to hang in there. Now, right now, if they finished 500 the rest of the way, they'd be at 89 wins, and I don't know if that's going to be good enough, but we'll see with Oakland if they're going to be able to win 90 games or more. They sure look like they're going to now, because I think they're 31-10 or 31-11. And they don't really need to keep that pace to beat out the Mariners, especially the way the Mariners are playing right now.
No, But the thing that concerns me, and again, this is breaking down the schedule, is that they're not hitting, and they have to come up and play Houston, they still have 10 more games against the Astros and that pitching staff, where the A's have already played 13 games, so they only have 6 games left. They're 4-9 in those games, so they're already, you can see how they did against them. They didn't, but those additional 4 games could end up being 3 losses, and that could be the difference for trying to catch or pass the A's.
Well, it's one of the weirdest seasons ever. And yeah, I was looking at the schedule too, John, and with you have it with Oakland and Houston there. So the Mariners have 10 games left with Oakland and 10 with Houston. And 7 with each team are on the road. So you only have 3 with both of those teams back at Safeco Field. And, you know, whether you think it's tougher to play on the road in baseball, probably not so much compared to the NBA and other sports, but still, you'd think the home team would get the advantage there. I'm trying to remember. So I've been following Mariner baseball ever since it started in 77, and usually you go into a season, you kind of have an idea if they're going to be good or bad, and usually bad. And this year, though, it's the weirdest season ever, I think, out of the 41 or 42 that they played, John, because they've been so good to the point that you're going, oh, my God, they're on a pace to win 103 games, and they're going to make the playoffs, and they might even win the AL West. And now you're looking, and then how about this, John? They give DePoto and Service the extensions, and then what if they finish 83-79 or 85-77? And will you wonder the right to give these guys extensions or not? I mean, that's kind of where we are, because when they gave them the extensions, you're going, well, job well done. Yeah, they deserve that. Good for the Mariners. Great decision. But now you're looking at it going, maybe they should have waited a little longer.
when you see the moves that DePoto made, and the one trade with Taijuan Walker and getting 2 All-Stars, Haniger and getting Segura, and then having these guys locked up now past 2021, I mean, that was huge. And D. Gordon, I know, again, he doesn't get on base as much as they need him to, but he's an All-Star. I mean, they pick up 4 All-Stars, and all of a sudden those guys were playing like All-Stars, but now they've just all hit the rocks. And Colum A is at least still doing well in the 8th inning. But, of course, if you're losing by 7 runs, 7-2, 7-3 games to Toronto, then your 8th and 9th innings are void.
Yeah, it's I know you're right. I know you're right. I'm glad you're talking sense into me here, too, because I think DePoto and Service, when it all comes down to the end of the season, that we're going to look back and go, yeah, okay, I'm glad these guys are still here, that for the most part, and I love Service as a manager, and, you can quibble and question his in-game moves if you want, but I think overall with the culture change and how he treats his players, I think it's been to the benefit of the team, and then certainly DePoto too. But boy, it's just such a weird one though to think that this team looked like it was a lock for the playoffs, and now it reminds me of horses I bet on at Emerald Downs, John. I've mentioned this on our show. Where you see the horse and you bet on it, and it's way ahead for the longest time during the race, and then the closers catch up to him, and then you look at your horse and he's fading in the stretch, and the Mariners remind me of that horse, unfortunately.
Exactly. Hey, so what's on the Jim Moore schedule today?
The Jim Moore schedule, well, I'm going to try and keep River from disrupting this picnic that's in progress here at Lewis Creek Park for the first part.
Okay.
Then I'm going to clean air conditioning in the Honda Ridgeline. I'll probably go to Greg's Japanese Auto because there's this guy named Wyman on the afternoon show. He's not very good, but he talks about Greg's Japanese Auto quite a bit, so I'll probably stop by there to see what they can do for my air conditioning. And then we're going to go to the Mariner game tonight, John.
Okay, watch the big maple. Hey, Jim, thanks for joining us.
Yeah. And, talk to you on Monday, John.
Okay. And, of course, Jim Moore's Danny, Dave, and Moore every day from 3 until 7. And, of course, listen to them. And, of course, we're going to get back to your phone calls, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Chris in Everett. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John, how you doing? Hey, I heard the conversation with you and Jim Moore. You know, I do agree with what you're saying about the Mariners, but okay. Anyways, there's about three things I want to talk to you about today is Washington Huskies football, Mariners, and the Seahawks. Okay, I'm going to start with the Huskies. In the Seattle, this magazine or the Seattle Times or whatever, I'm not sure if this is true or not about the Huskies. Are they favored to win the championship conference in 2018?
Yes. Yes, most, I think most people from Phil Steele to, I mean, I know ESPN, ESPN put them, I think, number four or number five. I think number five. And so, you know, when you see them ranked like that, they anticipate that they're going to win the conference and then be maybe close to being in that final four group for the playoffs.
Oh, nice. Since, yeah. You'd have a chance to win the whole thing for the national championship this year. That'd be really nice. Since 1991, when they shared the Miami Hurricanes, you know, I don't like that they shared a championship.
What
do you think about that?
I didn't like it. I mean, because you like to have a definitive thing, but again, the way things broke, I mean, which team would you favor when they're, you know, they don't have a chance to play each other? So, and that's the problem that college football had, and I think to a certain degree they still have. That's why I think they need to take the playoffs to eight teams, not four.
Right.
So it's because, you know, back then the championships were decided by judgment. A judgment is like, okay, so we have these teams at the end. They've just completed their bowl games, and so we're going to have to pick one. And it's like that, to me, is just, it's not good. I mean, you want definition. It's like, I don't like the idea of a football game or any kind of a sport where you go through it and you end up with no outcome. You end up with a tie. That's not good. And to go through a whole season and you come back and you basically have a tie, that's not good.
I agree with you, John. So, does the Huskies have a chance to win the national championship this year? Do you know?
Well, if you're going to be in the playoffs, yeah. I mean, that would be their one shot. I mean, one of the keys, obviously, is getting off to a good start and beating Auburn. That's going to be difficult because I'm sure they're not going to be favored because they're going to be, you know, not at Auburn, but they're going to be in the Georgia Dome. So there's going to be an advantage there. Well, not the Georgia Dome, but, I mean, in Atlanta. So that's one where, you know, it's going to be tough. But, hey, that's what their challenge is, and that's what Chris Peterson's trying to do.
Yeah. About the Seahawks, do you think the Seahawks would be real good this year? Like they draft
real good,
that
no.
Back?
I think they can be good.
Yeah.
I don't think it's because real good, when you're talking real good, then you're talking 11 or 12 wins, and I don't see him at that level. I think what you can do is, because Russell Wilson is going to be, the running game's going to be better. The defense isn't going to be as bad as people think because, you know, understand that seven, you know, you can talk about the five guys that are not there, from, there were Pro Bowlers on defense, but really three of them didn't play the final seven games. And during those final seven games, you got seven of those starters back, and they played respectable against very good football teams. So I think that the defense can maybe give up 22, 23 points a game. The offense can kind of counter that with a good running game and getting, you know, 24 to 20, 24 and a half points a game. And if that's the case, I think they can win 9 or 10.
Oh, wow. Hey, like you said, like a while back, John, you said about the wild card, too, right? Is that right?
Yeah. I think they could be in the mix for the wild card.
Yeah. About the Mariners here, do you think they can make the playoffs this year? That's a question mark.
It's a question. It's a big question mark. And I know for the last 2 weeks, because, you know, I'm big on that run differential, point differential in football. And when you see those numbers clicking the way they were, and then you see the A's clicking on the other side of it with really a team that has six young guys, 28 or younger, in their starting position group that are really starting to come on, then you start to say, wait a second, if the A's catch the Mariners and pass them, and the way things are going until they get Cano back, I mean, they could really drop some things. They got a tougher schedule closing than the A's. And so right now, I'm kind of looking down. I don't know if they're going to make it.
Oh, I see. Hey, I got two more to tell you. This is like real quick.
Yeah,
anyways,
briefly. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, did you know Top Gun 2 is filming right now?
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, and then there's a CGI, I think Ghostbusters 3 is coming out in 2019, their 35th anniversary. They tried to CGI Harold Ramis, if you heard about that in the past.
I did not know.
Okay. Well, John,
hey, Chris, thank you for the phone call.
Your wife is doing okay, doing good, so you have a good day. I'm going to take this off the air.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Let's go to Bill in Gig Harbor. Hey, Bill.
Hi, John. Good day, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Going to the Mariners pitching staff, you know, I think that Paxton and Gonzalez can compete with any of the top pitchers, you know, in either league. Leak and LeBlanc are good journeyman pitchers, but early in the year they won more than they lost because the Mariners are scoring more than four runs, and I think they have to do that for those guys to continue to win. And then when you go to Felix, you know, he's got to hold them to at least no more than three runs in the five innings, and then it's the bullpen has to come through. Throughout the year, you know, Vincent got off to a pretty good start the first few months, and then the last couple months he's not played well, and Service keeps using him in key situations. And the one that just made me cringe whenever he came in was Nicasio. They paid him $17 million for 2 years, and every time he comes in, you know, he's got good stuff, but he puts the pitches in locations where good hitters hit it in key situations, and they blow a lead or lose the game because of that. So I, you know, even if he hadn't got injured, I thought that he should be sent down or released. I think I was surprised that I'll probably pronounce it wrong, Elias was sent down to Tacoma. I thought he was going to be helpful for the Mariners. And like you said in your show, their talk with Mora, I was really disappointed that Gamma went down. I mean, he was hitting really good line drives, you know, into the hole between first and second or into the outfield. And, Heredia is a better defensive player, but, you know, they need runs. So, you know, if you think what they paid Felix this year and what they paid Nicasio, the Mariners would have been able to get a couple really, really good pitchers as free agents, you know, in July there, that went to other teams. But that's water under the bridge, I guess. I think as far as looking forward, I'm with you. I don't have a lot of hope that they'll make the playoffs. And they're going to have to really take a good look at what they're going to do with Seager. And Zunino is a good defensive catcher and a good handler of pitchers. You know, I can see him sticking with the team as a reserve catcher, but they need a bat there. And they need a bat, you know, we'll see how the new player, Maben, is going to work out.
And
Heredia
is
just
51 hitter, not a great hitter, so the expectations aren't great there. No, I just what you worry about is that how fast it's turned, and you get Cano back, and that can add a half run per game. But is it going to be in time enough? Are they, you know, if they're going to be 4 or 5 games behind the A's and having so many, you know, because they have 19 games. Put the Angels aside because they're kind of up and down and being a winning losing team. But they've gotten only 19 games left against teams with losing records, and they've lost to 2 to Toronto. And, you know, they need to win the next 2, because if you lose 3 out of 4 to Toronto, you're really in trouble.
Yeah, you dug yourself a hole you can't get out of. One quick question on football.
Yeah.
What have you heard on the Broncos offense there, particularly secondhand? I'm hearing that Sutton is looking good at wide receiver and Butt is looking good at tight end. And and, of course, you know, Keenum is doing well at quarterback.
It's an upgrade, no question. I think there's still questions about the running back position. You know, is it going to be Booker? Is it going to be Freeman? They have to sort that out. I'm hearing good things about the way the defense has been playing. It sounds like the defense has really done a good job there, and they still have enough talent on defense. I mean, the big thing is now changing the attitude of the team, because it's gone from a winner to a losing type of attitude. You know, they've got enough talent. They just got to, you know, get Vance Joseph to get this team to play much better. Hey, well, thank you for the phone call.
You bet.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet in Seattle. Hey, Jet.
Dr. John, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm not sure. You got any updates or news for me coming from Jet Camp? I know they've got their first inter-squad scrimmage tonight.
Yeah. I'd say I'm hoping they're going to be able to field a 53-man roster because it seems like everybody's suspended on the team. I mean, how many guys ultimately are going to be suspended? I mean, that's sad. And haven't seen one like this against the Bengals.
Some of them were going to be released on work release. They could go to the scrimmage and then report back tomorrow morning.
I think that could be true.
Yeah. I saw Donahue pled guilty to a second DUI. Was it this week? So
He did, yeah.
There's got to be some more suspensions coming.
Because if I'm not mistaken, I think there may be three or so in the works.
Still in the works?
Yeah, I mean, because you're waiting to find it. It's sad because, again, there's just been so many incidents involving this team.
Well, yeah, and they've also had a rash of injuries, too. I don't know how serious some of them are. But there's been some good reports, at least that I've been reading, that this rookie class may be panning out into something that may be viable for these guys beyond Darnold. It sounds like, at least so far, Shepard's been doing pretty well, their defensive tackle from the third round. And the one thing I really am curious about is that, and I like the draft pick, especially where they got him, was that the cornerback from Tulane. I think he's going to be a wonderful slot cover guy. But it sounds like he's having himself a pretty good camp, too.
Right.
So he could become a Buster Screen replacement perhaps next year. So it looks like they may have picked up a couple of good kids besides Darnold this year, which is encouraging.
Yeah, but here's the thing that kind of irritates me, and I don't know if it does the same to you. I mean, you remember back when they brought back Revis, and they spent so much money in the secondary. I mean, it was like about $150 million. It was like a ridiculous amount of money at the in the secondary. And then the next thing you know, they're breaking it up. And what you can pretty well see is that they go out and they get Maurice Claiborne, and they spend more money in the secondary, which is fine. But now with some of these young guys, I mean, they're going to have to start breaking that up again. And so you don't have that year-to-year continuity. Because, I mean, there's no way that Buster Scrimes is going to be on the team next year.
No, but he's in the last year of his contract this year. He was the only long-term deal, I think, that they locked themselves into when they did that, when they basically bought a backfield. I mean, they went out, they've got a couple of safeties, and they got a couple of cornerbacks, a screen being the last one of them. But I thought it was at least shrewd because I understand the continuity thing, but I think part of that was from upper management, and I say above McCagnan, for example, when they basically gave him a mandate to try to win now and go for it. That's why he made the deal for Fitzpatrick. He made the deal for Marshall, all of which went very well. He was stuck with Decker's contract. We've got to talk about that in a second. And then he bought the defensive backfield, spent good money on that. But the thing I will give him McCagnan credit for was the only guy he really got locked into was Screen. I mean, Gilchrist, they could bail whenever they wanted. Revis, they bailed. And I forget who the other cornerback was that they picked up. But that was a short-term deal as well. So they weren't locked in for a long time. So I give them credit for that because they did go for it, upon mandate from the Johnsons, but they didn't lock themselves into anything long-term that really is still that they're still getting crushed with. And I think, Screen is still a viable defensive back, although he's certainly not worth his contract. But, they've started this whole rebuilding process, and I understand the continuity thing that you're mentioning. But, you got to start somewhere. If you're going to tear it down, you got to start building it up. They drafted two safeties last year. They're bringing in cornerbacks left and right to try to see if somebody will pan out. And, you can only do what you can do and work with what – I mean, you're basically starting from scratch. So right. I'm not all that concerned about it. I think as these guys, I think they'll work out well. I'm not all that concerned about it, to be honest with you, at this point in time. They can't keep it together in a couple of years, and you got to start scratching your head. But at least for right now, I think they're trending upward. That's my take on it.
No, I think that they're on the upward path. It's just a matter that, it just takes some time, and now it's a matter of just kind of wait it out to see how soon it's going to go. And so, so many of these teams, it's more of next year's. But the advantage they have, they're still in the AFC, and the AFC as a conference right now is just not very good.
Well, that's true. That's true. Or you could say there's a lot of, some would say mediocrity, but others would say parity. I don't know what you want to characterize it as. But let's be candid about the defensive backfield, for example. Look, the Jets have no pass rush. They still don't have a pass rush. And don't tell me Todd Bowles is a genius about blitzing, because you keep blitzing and they keep getting burned. You know, the last genius for blitzers was Rex Ryan, and now everybody's doing it, so none of this is new anymore. Everybody's looking for it. So the blitzes aren't going to get you anywhere except burned. So until they figure out how to get a pass rush without having to blitz, you know, any defensive backfield is going to be susceptible. And, you know, the Jets are just another one. I don't care how much money you spend back there. You can only cover these guys for so long a period of time before somebody's going to pop open. So, you want to build a good backfield, figure out how to get to the quarterback. And the Jets,
that's true.
That's the one thing on defense that they still haven't figured out this year, and that's something that they're going to have to strongly address in next year's draft.
Well, and that's the thing, I think. They're taking things like one year at a time.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's like, was it better to put the money in the secondary, or was there options that they could get the pass rush going? The one thing that at least they listened to us on is that getting more speed at the in the defense, and at least in the drafts that they've had now, they've done that. I mean, they've got faster linebackers. I mean, they were not athletic at the linebacker position. They're getting faster a little bit in the secondary, so that's encouraging. But, it's still, you're right, pass rush is a big thing. Hey, Jet, thank you for the phone call.
Take care, John. Enjoy the weather.
Okay, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Brad in Mount Vernon. Hey, Brad.
Morning, John. Hey, always appreciate your insight on everything. But I do have a question for you. I don't agree with, he's got a contract. He needs to fulfill that contract. However, that said, the players have a point as far as the owners not fulfilling their end of the contract. And I'm sure that, in the upcoming collective bargaining agreement there, that's going to be a major issue. Where do you think this is going to, kind of equalize things for the players and the owners?
Well, I don't know if there can be any major adjustment that the players have the ability to succeed on. I mean, if they strike for some period of time, the owners have so much leverage. And the question is, sure, they lose money, the NFL owners do, but they have money reserved where the players don't. And so now let's say that you've got an average salary of $1 million or so for a player. I mean, are you willing to sacrifice that to get some games? I mean, they're not going to win on the guaranteed issue. I mean, there's a little adjustment they can make as far as the funding of guaranteed contracts to maybe get more money into year three and year four. I think they'll succeed in that one. But again, you can't have a sport that has a hard cap that's going up $10 to $12 million a year and then expect you're going to be able to maintain with the guarantees. Because I mean, look at the Seahawks right now. I mean, they're in good shape with cap wise. I mean, they've got about $12 million in cap room, but they've got $6.8 tied up in Cam Chancellor. They still have money tied up in Malik McDowell. And so, if you lose $10 million right there, that's as a player or two of cap room. And so, and you're going to lose players with injuries.
There was a lot in the past. Different sports had insurance on players and things like that to fulfill their end of the contracts. Is there such a thing as an insurance, like if a player does get injured, does get cut, that he can fall back on?
Well, the player can. That is one thing. In fact, I think one player who ended up getting $1.5 million contract had an insurance policy from Lloyd's or so that if he gets less than, say, $10 million, he gets that money made up. So you can do it, but it's costly. But of course, if you don't get that big money, then you could do it. But from the team standpoint, no. I mean, their insurance is the fact that if you want to cut a guy, you can cut a guy as long as they don't have a full time guarantee.
As long as this is going on, there's going to be the holdouts.
There's only four. But, it's not, believe me, it's not like the old days, because in the old, because, the fines are so substantial. I mean, you're talking about $40,000 a day. You can lose as much as 25% of your proration this year. And then, of course, if you start holding out in the regular season, then you lose game checks. So it's tough. Hey, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Menke. Irish Menke, how are you? Irish?
Back east to the Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio.
Yep.
Mr. Clayton, did you... is this the time when you guys sit down in the old room and sort of start putting things together for next year's nominees?
Nope. No, okay. We'll get our lists of 100 and some preliminaries, and then we'll start to go through that and start whittling it down to 25. We'll probably do that, oh, I'd say sometime in September.
Okay, and did you get a chance to go by and check out your spot in the Hall of Fame and make
I did
sure
not, no.
keeping it clean and it looking good?
Nope. I did see a picture that they took of Shireen Williams, and her. You know, she was because you know she got in as the former president of the Pro Football Writer, covered the Cowboys and worked in Florida, and the picture had my name right above hers. So I mean, for
wow.
2007.
Okay.
So I did see
a little PR
the picture.
Mr.
Picture was tweeted out. Yeah.
So, Mr. Clayton, how is CJ Procise looking these days at camp?
Well, you can see him on the practice field, so he's looking good.
For the first time,
he's gone through camp.
Any doubts he won't make the team?
Oh, there's always questions, but because it's a very competitive running back group, and you know there is that question. I mean, right now he's running as the number three. He has great value, but again, two guys right now are ahead of him: Rashad Penny and Chris Carson, with Chris Carson being number one.
Okay, and Sports Illustrated, Mr. Clayton, came out with their preseason top 25,
mm-hmm.
and it was shocking.
Shocking in what way?
Well, my goodness. They had Notre Dame at 13.
Mm-hmm.
And they even worse for you, they had Washington at 16.
Wow. That's
and they weren't too kind with Washington. And I quote, "The Huskies have been good for the past few seasons, but not quite great." Whoa! And that continues in 2018.
Okay.
Holy moly, guacamole there, Husky fan.
ESPN has him like fifth, and I know Phil Steele has him four.
Yeah, I understand, but the whole schmooze, everybody's trying to get some attention, so you
right.
come out with outrageous things. Well, Mr. Clayton, what
mm-hmm.
about, you know, where do you... You are a great trend guy as far
right.
as being able to watch patterns and trends. And are the Mariners at that typical point in the season where they begin to become the Mariners of old?
Well, right now the numbers don't lie. I mean, when you see that minus number as far as the run differential, I mean, you know, that tells you you're now in that losing mode, and that's been the case. I mean, what, 7-15 over the last 22 games for 2.8 runs a game? I mean, 2.8 runs a game, I mean, that's worse than like 5 years ago when they were getting in the 3.3, 3.4. Remember, they had that about 4 or 5 year stretch. I mean, 2.8 runs a game is just horrid.
Isn't this the typical pattern around CFIB? They start to get lost.
This pattern is totally goofy. I mean, this one goes against every grain.
It's the worst trend that you've seen in a long time.
No, it's pretty bad. I mean, to be 24 games above 500 and running away with the wild card, and now to be a game and a half back and only scoring 2.8 runs a game, this is not good. Hey, Irish, got to run. Thank you. So we're going to come back, talk to Michael Sean Duger from The Athletic. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.